One in five Australian men are diagnosed with prostate cancer before the age of 85. It's probably around 16,000 men each year. These days, many who are diagnosed by PSA testing, that's the controversial blood test, wait and are watched carefully. But even so, there are still thousands of men who choose or need to be treated. The problem has been that GPs tend to refer to urologists, the surgeons. And even if you put aside the financial conflict of interest, surgeons will usually recommend what they know best, which is cutting. And patients who are beguiled by technology such as robotics and the desire to have the tumour out go with that choice, which infuriates radiation oncologists who reckon that men should be offered the option of radiation therapy whose side effects such as incontinence and erectile dysfunction are usually less, yet with similar cure rates. But when offered, what do men do? And that's what a study in Southwest Sydney tried to find out. In our Sydney studio, our radiation oncologist, Associate Professor Sandra Turner, and psychologist Dr. Ben Smith. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Norman.
How prevalent, Sandra, is this issue of not getting referred to radiation oncology?
It's a very common issue. It's hard to put an absolute number on it. I'd just like to wheel back a little bit to your intro where you said that radiation oncologists are infuriated by it. I think more to the point...
Well, you are, but maybe not everybody else. Is that what you say?
I think radiation oncologists are disappointed because they also can offer several very high-tech treatment choices. We might get onto that later, but the problem is that men are not best served by the model as it exists. It's quite appropriate that men see urologists who make the diagnosis and do the initial assessment. The problem in Australia is what happens after that. So how common is it? It's very common. We work with a lot of men. My colleagues and I see people around Australia and New Zealand and in other countries talking to our colleagues. We hear this day in, day out, that many men that we get to see if they need radiation therapy afterwards, or if we're talking to consumers and consumer groups, will say that they were not fully aware of their treatment options.
And it's particularly a case where they've got slightly more advanced prostate cancer and they're going to need radiation therapy as well, and surgery doesn't necessarily add much.
We're talking about men who actually require treatment. You're quite correct that a lot of men with low-risk prostate cancer don't require any treatment at all but should go on an active surveillance protocol. But for people that do require treatment or for other reasons want treatment, the issue is that they're not getting to understand both treatment options. And it's not for people that have particularly advanced cancer. Those that do and have an operation are much more likely, if not certain, to need radiation therapy. But even in potentially local prostate cancers, localised to the prostate, there are still a number that may need radiation. But more to the point, even if they don't ever need another treatment, the point is it should be up to them to weigh up the pros and cons, their preferences, fully understand their treatment options so that they can make an informed decision about which treatment they prefer.
So, Ben Smith, you and Sandra took advantage of a situation which is actually quite unusual in Australia, because robots are usually in private hospitals, but Liverpool Hospital, there are other public hospitals with robots, but it's one of the few with a robot. So you're in the public sector, and in theory, you eliminate financial conflict of interest, and you've got the robot. What was the situation you exploited? That was the situation you exploited, and what did you do?
Well, as Sandra mentioned, not a lot of men get to speak to both a urologist and a radiation oncologist before deciding on their prostate cancer treatment. But what happened as part of our study is we instituted a combined clinic so that any man who wanted to be considered for a robotic prostatectomy in the public system had to see both. And what we saw was that men really valued having the opportunity.
So just before you jump ahead, so in other words, you saw the surgeon and you said, I wanted radiation oncology, but you had to go and see a radiation oncologist. Sorry, I wanted to have the robot. Regardless, you actually had to go and see a radiation oncologist as well to hear the story.
That's correct, yeah. And we owe it to our urological colleagues at Liverpool Hospital that they were agreeable to that.
Now, you did a survey of these men. It wasn't a large study, but it just gives an indication of what's going on. You did a survey of these men before they went into the combined clinic. What was their attitudes? What were the choices they were going to make before they went in?
Yeah, so at that point, a lot of the men had a strong preference for robotic prostatectomy, partly as you mentioned, it was a population that was selected in that way. The main thing that they seemed to be judging or making that judgment on was that they felt it offered a better cure rate or a more definitive cure than other treatment options like
radiotherapy.
Which,
of course, is complete bull.
Which is not correct, as you say.
There's no difference between that and open operations, but nonetheless, the robot is there. Then they saw the radiation oncologists were offered their options. What happened afterwards?
Yeah, so these are not big numbers, but it did seem that the men who were still undecided at the point of going to the clinic, about 50% then chose to have the robotic surgery, and the other half had the radiotherapy. So it did seem like it evened up the preference.
And those were in the undecided group?
Correct, yeah.
Which was about half the sample. It was a small sample. It was only 25 men, so it's really an indication here. And you and their reaction to having to being made to go to this joint clinic, did they hate it or not?
No. I think even the men who had a strong preference for robotic prostatectomy leading up to that clinic really appreciated the opportunity to have their preferences, I guess, considered, and hearing the other side of the story. In some ways, for some men, it just affirmed their preferences. For others, they did change their mind. But in general, all men thought it was a really good thing. The one thing was that it was too late in the process. I mean, men had already seen a urologist normally a couple of times before that stage, and many had already made up their mind, as
all
I
right.
mentioned.
So, Sandra, how could this work in the private sector, particularly early on? I mean, it puts a lot in the GP, really, doesn't it, in terms of the referral process?
It does. Just one thing, again, to go back on what you said, I didn't have any part in this study at all. So Ben and people at Liverpool and the urologists and radiation oncologists there have run this study, and they elected to allow me to speak about it.
Okay.
But going back to your question, yes, it is. It's difficult for GPs. I think what we need to do is to empower patients and families and their GPs and make sure we get the word out there that there are several very good and, as you say, equivalent treatment options that have very different pros and cons. And unless somebody has actually had the information from the experts in those fields, they can't possibly be fully aware to make those decisions. So we would hope that more and more urologists would refer patients to see radiation oncologists. And it does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't across the board. But again, general practitioners have an important role, and they say themselves they believe in this role that they want to help patients navigate what can be a very complicated and confusing system. And they need to encourage men that they have time. They have time to think about their options, and they don't need to rush into any treatment.
Associate Professor Sandra Turner is a radiation oncologist at Westmead Hospital in Sydney, and Ben Smith is a transitional research fellow at the Centre for Oncology Education and Research Translation at the University of New South Wales at Liverpool. I'm Norman Swan. This has been the Health Report. See you next week.